Hello and welcome to episode. Wait, actually, before I do that, I should actually see what episode now. Are we at 228?
I think so.
228, yep. I need
Let me
to
see.
actually make sure I'm not just making stuff up here. There we go. Hello and welcome to episode 228 of the Raceable Podcast. We are deep in summer. Tim is at the beach. Tim also has a dead car, so he will not be joining us today. But we do have a really great special guest. I'd like you to welcome Allison King, who is the author of The Phoenix Pencil Company, which we've talked about. Lovely, lovely book cover right here. Allison, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me and for reading the
Yeah, it was exciting. I was really surprised when I think once your publisher kind of figured out a publication schedule, they reached out to us, which was something that doesn't usually happen. Usually it's either me or Johnny like trying to like hound somebody down on Twitter to be like, hey, or Instagram, just like,
Oh, really? We promise we're
come join our
cool.
podcast. But this made a lot of sense. It was, yeah. I mean, pencil's right there in the name. Yeah. So yeah, all three of us, John, if Tim's not here, have been just enjoying this. I finished this yesterday afternoon, and it was so much fun. There's, we'll get into it, but there's themes of just like there's a story that's happening in modern day in 2018. There's a story that's happening in kind of like post-war pre-communist China and Shanghai and Taiwan, just kind of all over the place. And we'll talk a little bit about the mechanic, the kind of magical realism mechanic, but it centers around pencils. That was really fun. And it really made me, yeah, wonder if somebody were to sort of like reproduce what I write with pencils, what would it be? Probably mostly just grocery lists and work notes. It'd be very boring, but
I took my journal off my desk after reading this book. Don't worry. My kids won't
Oh
find it.
no.
So yeah, maybe we can get started. Allison, I would love to know a little bit more about you, and then sort of where the genesis of this book came from. I know that it was originally a short story, and I know that you developed it out, but would love if you could just maybe talk a little bit about that, and then also your background as a writer and as a human.
So yeah, the book start or the when I first started thinking about the book, it came from reading a nonfiction book called The Last Boat Out of Shanghai by Helen Zia. And it's a nonfiction book that and she interviews, I think it's four people who leave Shanghai during between like the 1940s to the 60s. So either from like World War II or the Chinese Civil War or the Cultural Revolution, those all happened in a very short amount of time. And it was very eye-opening for me because I just really did not know that history like really at all, even though it was what my grandparents had gone through. And so I just started wanting to know more about that period of history. And then the flip part of that is that my grandparents did have a pencil company at one point. And it went from, they expanded it from China to Taiwan. And it was actually that expansion to Taiwan that got them out of mainland China before a lot of the really awful things happened. And so while they didn't really talk about the war all that much, they did talk about the pencil company at times, not a ton either, because it was also kind of a traumatic thing for them. It went bankrupt at one point. But it was something that I had heard about before. And so I just started imagining a family of pencil makers living in Shanghai, like pre-occupation, but they would go through occupation as well and then eventually have to leave Shanghai. So kind of follow what millions of people had to go through. And yeah, that was really the genesis of the book. I was always writing more fantasy and more on like the speculative side. And so it was like automatically, I was just wondering, okay, what's like the magic that is going to be in these pencils? And that was kind of an exciting moment for me to think of something that the pencils could do and use that as a metaphor for whatever themes I did want to tell, which I didn't know at the time, but or in that like very first period, but I figured it out.
I'm hesitant to share just because I think it's a really just fun thing to discover because the sort of like magical part of it doesn't come in right away in the book. It takes a few chapters to really like warm up to it. But I think it's probably going to be central to the discussion. So would you kind of share what that mechanism is? And I guess we'll put a spoiler warning here for anybody who doesn't want to hear. Maybe skip ahead a
Yeah, for
minute.
sure. But yeah, so it's the idea is that the members of this family are able to revive what a pencil once wrote before. So if you had written like your grocery list before, they are able to kind of, oh no, I can't quite see what that
Johnny, what
Oh, that's a spoiler.
your
Sorry.
Oh,
I'm
spoiler.
using a
Okay,
light
great.
pencil with someone.
But yeah, they can revive what the pencil wrote before, and it's a process that involves them kind of stabbing themselves with the pencil and then bleeding out the words again. So it's not a painless process, but it is a
It
like
feels a little bit
very
like the writing process, doesn't it? Just like just forcing this out of you in
Probably,
order
yeah, that's probably
to
where it came from. But yeah, it's and that's the bulk of it. It's not that complicated, I guess. But it has all sorts of implications, good and bad. So they can revive, like in one instance, they're trying to bring back like the poems that somebody who has recently been killed once wrote so that his son can read them. So that's a good thing, probably. But then there's all sorts of bad things, like they get recruited to this war effort of passing encrypted messages, which also might be okay. It's not a strictly bad thing, but then eventually it leads to like a lot of surveillance and spying, and that's not so good. So that's kind of the arc I wanted to follow with the magic.
I'm sure there was maybe not reforged pencils, but there was certainly a lot of surveillance, especially of, I'm sure your research uncovered this. I've definitely read about this too, just like Chinese nationals during that time period, like in the US, just kind of like figuring out who is abandoned and betrayed, the state. Just get in there.
Yeah, and it was across all the countries that are covered in the book, like China, Taiwan, and America. It's happening everywhere.
I think I didn't realize, you mentioned it, but I didn't realize how close the Japanese occupation, World War II, the Chinese Civil War, the kind of communist revolution. I didn't realize how close together that all was.
Yeah, well, I didn't know either until I read the book.
So we have to ask everyone this because this is a podcast about pencils. But in your personal life, and it'd be really interesting to hear in your professional life, how do pencils still fit into your life today, if at all? And what was your relationship like, in the past with pencils?
So I think, well, okay, so because my grandparents had the pencil company, I feel like that skewed me towards liking pencils in general. And then, I mean, it's not like it actually went bankrupt when my mother was still like very young, so it's not like it was something that even my mother wouldn't really know that much about it either, but it was something that, and I grew up with my grandparents, so they did talk about it here and there. But I would say that what really got me into writing utensils in general was spending summers in Taiwan. And I'm sure you've seen like the or been to like the Asian stationery stores before, but they're like so amazing, and especially as a kid going to one of those, and they have like the writing pads out so you can try all of them, and there's like so many colors, and they're just arrayed on like rows and rows of shelves, and it's like, I don't know, it still gives me a sense of wonder. But as a kid, I was, and also in because I would go to Taiwan often with my grandparents, but it was like, or Taipei is a relatively safe city, and I was allowed to just run around on my own a bit, which I wasn't really allowed to do in America. But in Taiwan, I could, and then I would just spend like afternoons in the stationery stores, and then they're also pretty affordable, so I could afford them as a kid and buy them, bring them back to America, and show them to my friends, and it was always, I don't know, I think it kind of solidified my relationship with this land that my grandparents had come from, or that they had lived like a good chunk of their lives, and that my parents grew up in, but I was born in America, but being able to go back, and that was always kind of special to me. And yeah, and then other than that, I think like I studied engineering in college, so I had to use a lot of erasable things to do my math problem sets and all of that. So I was, and then that was kind of the same thing. Like we would, if I couldn't get back to Taiwan, then we would like order our favorite pints of pencils and lead refills on like the Japanese websites and have them. We would like bulk order them as a group of college kids.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But now I still use the pencils like every so often, but I wouldn't say it's like my go-to writing utensil. It's kind of a special treat sometimes if I come back to one and I'm like, oh, that's kind of nice. I do use it for like sometimes I draw, but not super often, just like little sketches, and that's always fun. But yeah, I would say I'm probably more of a pen person now. But
How dare you? Well, Johnny also has many
yeah.
hobbits. It's
It's embarrassing.
embarrassing. Yeah, I've only just started getting into fountain pens, like as of a
Oh
month
man,
ago. So.
it's a rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Johnny has some
Staring at Bob's
recommendations
teeth.
for you.
Yeah.
I also just was like I didn't find like Asian stationery until I was an adult. And I moved from Indiana out here to San Francisco and just like discovered the Mito, like the Kinokuniya kind of like stationery store. And it was definitely had that like childlike sense of wonder. And it's like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. So, Allison, I wasn't, so when I was reading this, it was just I was expecting sort of like this like historical kind of like story about like people, you know, in the early 20th century and like kind of cutting away to modern day. But I when I was reading this, I didn't expect to be reading about data nodes and git commits and dog fooding and technical terms. I also work in tech, so like terms that I hear a lot kind of every day. So we talked about your background with pencils, but can you maybe talk about your background with technology? So what was your biggest challenge balancing the technical details of pencil making with coding and putting that together in your story?
So I'm a software engineer and I've been doing that for quite a few years now. And I mean, I'm also a millennial, so I kind of grew up with technology. And yeah, I think it was those were also terms that I was using or hearing every day in my various software engineering roles. And I think very early on, I knew that, well, okay, so the story did start as a short story, and it was purely only the historical part. And it wasn't even like that similar of a story, but the magic was the same. But and I felt that it was missing something of what I wanted to say. I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to say, but that it wasn't like quite getting where I wanted it to be. And it wasn't until I thought that I wanted to add this modern storyline with technology that it became the story I wanted to tell of data privacy, really. And yeah, at the time I wasn't working in data privacy, but I was working at a nonprofit that it's the goal was to like collect community stories to surface them to local journalists and politicians so that people could better know like what exactly people in the community were worried about. And that was what I was thinking about. And I thought I could use the pencils as a metaphor for data privacy because data privacy isn't something people want to pick up a book about.
Hey, speak for
I would read
yourself.
that.
Yeah, okay. Well, great. Now I know. But yeah, and I think in terms of balancing like the characters with the, I don't know, the random technical bits, I think it's often helpful for me to know how the character sees the world. So in this case, Monica is one of the narrators of this book, and she's like 18 or 19. She's pretty young. She's a budding software engineer, and she's grown up with technology probably even more than I have. And she's always thought of it as like this kind of magical thing that was able to let her connect with her father, who was across the world. And I think being able to have that lens, like knowing that Monica is going to naturally see things through computer-ish analogies, is kind of a fun way to write a character as well. And same thing with the grandmother character, who's the other narrator. She is going to see things in terms of pencils, and because that's what she's growing up with. I remember you mentioned the data nodes. So there's like the scene where Monica's kind of sad, so like she finds out something quite sad, and so she is sad, and she imagines herself and her grandparents as like data packets that are not making it to like the other like the place they're trying to make it to. And that was, I don't know if you all know the author Ruth Ozeki. She wrote A Tale for the Time Being and also The Book of Form and Emptiness, which is a book told from the point of view of a book, so which is kind of cool. But anyway, I had heard her talk before about how she had a character who was just going through something sad, and in her first draft, it was like, "Oh, this is so sad," and blah blah blah. But then she realized that if she could have the character think of her sadness as a metaphor for something, or as something that she connects with naturally, so she actually had the character compare it to like feeling like a fish in her stomach, and that became like a metaphor through the entire book. So that's kind of what I wanted to do with Monica, of like, oh, she's sad, but let's make it like fit into like the way that she would view the world.
Yeah. And I love the conversations that she had with Louise about just like comparing, I think, like git commits to sort of like narrative reframing and to a storytelling. And that was, I kind of work at the like intersection of like tech and I work in UX, like I'm a UX writer.
Oh,
So
okay,
like
yeah.
thinking a lot about like writing and the humanities and things like that, like, but through the lens of like software and making that
Right,
work. And
yeah.
that was just, yeah, just so great to read. I really enjoyed
Oh,
that
thank
part.
you.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was actually the tricky thing of like, I thought the git commit scene was cool, but I wasn't
Yeah.
sure if non-technical people
You
would
did
think
a
it
great
was
job of
weird or
like
like, yeah, thank
showing why
you.
this is relevant, not just to code. So
Oh, great.
yeah. Yeah.
So you spoke to this a little bit. Sorry, I'm talking about your grandparents' pencil factory, but we like to joke on here that pencil is forever because it's carbon that's held by static electricity and it doesn't fade like ink does. So, when I first read it and I was thinking of the imagery of something going into your veins and then bleeding back out, I kept thinking of ink. And a lot of the imagery you mentioned sort of
I
talks about
think you
ink
called it ink
and
at one point too. Like
yeah.
you
I think
referenced it
so,
almost
yeah.
as ink, which was interesting. Yeah.
And pencils aren't water soluble, so like, we all have a little graphite mark
Ha
somewhere
ha!
in our
We
mouth.
caught
But so I'm wondering, like, why did you choose pencils besides the pencil factory? Because, they're sort of paradoxical in that you would expect them to be temporary, but they're not. They're you could erase them, but if you leave them alone, they'll last forever. The marks they make will last forever. So yeah, was there something about the weird dual nature of pencils that made you pick that instead of like fountain pens?
Yeah, well, I wasn't into fountain pens at the time. So, no, it's no, I like the way you put it. And I think part of it is, I don't know if this happened to you too, but I think it's not an uncommon childhood occurrence of like stabbing a pencil
Oh,
in your skin, which I think, and then like that mark stays with you like for a really long time.
I have one from 1991 stuck in my
Oh, there
wrist.
you go.
I have one in my leg
Yeah.
from somewhere around then.
Yeah, so I think I wasn't like, I'm sure that was mulling around in my subconscious. And then also, I think because people often think of pencil as temporary because you can erase it. And I was interested in an object that is largely viewed as harmless. It's just a pencil, but, and people think you can just erase it. And that's kind of also how I feel about the internet, maybe, of like you can post stuff and you think like, oh, no one will see this, or you'll think that will never come back and bite me later.
Hello, Internet Archive.
Yeah. But at the same time, like lots of data is lost on the internet if you don't pay for your storage or whatever. And so yeah, I guess that's kind of the theme I was trying to explore there. And also I just thought it would be cool to have like a family that was really devoted to the craft of of making a pencil.
Yeah, I love how they all sharpen them with knives. Like, no, we're even better at this.
Just the main character is sitting there. She's like in her 90s and she just pulls out a pocket knife and starts sharpening a pencil. It's like, dude. Dude. I think that the similarities between you and Monica, the main character, are pretty clear. But I also wonder if there are parts of you and Louise kind of pour that in there. I think that the sort of her just maybe desperation or just like sense of needing to get stories out of Meng, who's the main character's what great grandmother or great great aunt, great great aunt, and
It's
then
a little
also her own
unclear.
grandmother who were partners back then. So I guess before I ask this question, like just some background. So my partner is Chinese Canadian, and her parents fled, or her grandparents fled from China to Hong Kong and then to Vancouver, which was like I think a big kind of a big route after the Cultural Revolution. I know that whenever she would press her grandparents for more information, just like what was your childhood like? They just really did not want to talk about it. So I know that that was a fairly common thing. Have you gone to lengths to get stories from your grandparents, just kind of about the old days, or is this something that you're just like?
No, so I think I definitely did put a lot of myself in both Monica and Louise, but I think so Monica definitely has like my relationship with my grandparents, maybe, except Monica is so my grandparents passed away when I was in high school, so it was really before I was thinking about really, I don't know, I was just like, high school, just doing my high school things and wasn't really thinking about like what their story might be or like why they wouldn't really bring it up voluntarily. Whereas Monica is a bit older and she gets to think about it and her grandparents are still like relatively healthy and have like those memories. So she actually has that ability, whereas I often felt more like Louise of like, I am coming into the world now and I want to know like the kind of person I think I should be, but I also don't feel like I really know because I don't know my own family history. That's kind of where I was going with her character. And so she kind of latches onto Monica because Monica does have that. Like, even though Monica is a pretty generally reclusive and shy character, she's like, she has a pretty firm sense of like her, where her family is from and what kind of person she thinks she is. Whereas Louise is more of a drifter. And I think that probably is more common with, descendants of people who left China during that time. And I think it's a lot of also why it's like there's an instinct for me, at least as like an Asian American person, to like stay quiet and not speak up on a lot of things. And I think that comes from like that generation of, oh, that could be dangerous. And like, just keep your head low so we can like keep living in the countries.
But also, I feel like every sort of like just like Asian American main character, female main character, like had a moment where they're just like I gotta express myself. I'm burn this shit down, right? Like whether or not that was no spoilers, but yeah, there was some like either literal or metaphorical burning down. I feel like everybody had that moment, which was interesting.
Yeah, I think so. And I that's something I wanted to be able to give them. And I think it is, I don't know, cathartic in a way.
I will say I don't know when I was I something I've been thinking a lot about, like my parents who are aging and just like they have some stories from their childhood that I'm trying to figure out kind of how to get out of them. Nothing quite as traumatic or dramatic as this, but like the point at which so Monica brings this pencil that her grandmother has written like a huge like just backstory of her life, which takes up like about half of the chapters in the book. She brings that to Shanghai to give to her great aunt, and just like, hey, this is the story that my grandmother spent a lot of time as she's been like declining into, no spoilers, into dementia before this happened. And her aunt is just like, you know what, you should reforge this, not me. And I was just like, ah. And so like all of a sudden, like yeah, Monica learns like all this, like basically the other half of the book that we as the reader knew, but like she didn't know as kind of the main character, and just she reforges. That's the name of the process of like taking this in and kind of like recirculating the story. And yeah, that was for me, that was just such a just good and dramatic moment. And just like she got to learn about her grandmother kind of finally. So
Oh, thank
yeah,
you.
that was
Yeah,
yeah.
I always knew that was like how the story would end, but it actually wasn't that clear to me that she had to be the one to reforge it. Like at first, I thought her great aunt would reforge it, and then she would give her like the paper product.
I did say just a little aside. I thought that was going to happen after she went into like a convenience store and bought a notebook. She bought the notebook, I think, to bring back to her to bring back to Louise or something. And I was just like, oh, what's going to happen with that notebook, huh? So, because that's what happens. Just for those who are listening who haven't read it, there's like you sort of like ingest the writing of the pencil into your bloodstream, and then you can cut yourself, and it basically like bleeds onto a notebook. And it sounds like very almost grotesque or dramatic, but also like really just the black blood comes out of your wrist into the notebook. So
So your book is all about stories and who should have access to them. So I'm wondering, how did your work in big quotes, computers, inspire you to write about stories as stories? And do you see a distinction between stories and data? And if so, like, where's the distinction?
Oh, interesting. So I mentioned earlier, much of this book was written when I was at that nonprofit that was collecting community conversations for the mission was to like surface underheard voices to people who could make a difference about it. And actually building the tech for that, like it was pretty cool tech in terms of like natural language processing and like textual analysis. But the hard part is like the community outreach, and it was a nonprofit that was through MIT. So, and a lot of communities don't trust MIT because it's like a big elite institution. But
Have you seen those robot dogs? They're scary.
But yeah, so I wasn't, I mean, I was obviously the engineer, not the community builder, but the community builders really had to do so much work to like get communities to trust them, trust the technology, and trust that we would safeguard their stories. And I mean, this was a while ago, so it was before really ChatGPT was a thought of like we could send your stories to OpenAI, which
I
I
was
don't
going
like
to bring that
the nonprofit is still around, and I'm sure they're not doing that. But I'm sure there's even less trust in technology now than there was when I was working there. And yeah, and I mean, it's kind of weird to think about, but the book is set in 2018, and I think even in 2018 there was a lot more trust in technology. I mean, I think it started eroding after the 2016 US election, but in 2018 I think it was a little, it was still like, I don't know.
It seemed kind of temporary back then. You're like, no, things will go back to like safety.
So that's definitely something I was thinking about. And then my next job after, or I left that nonprofit to work at a data privacy startup, which was kind of a whole new experience for me because I had only been in nonprofits before, and this was like a very startup-y vibe. And that's where I learned about, or that's where a lot of these terms of like dog fooding and like I obviously I'd done like Git commits before, but I hadn't done that much like Git rebasing before. So, and like more about open source software, which is another great topic. But yeah, your other question was about data versus stories, which is, I don't know, I
Same thing,
think.
Johnny. Same thing.
Maybe.
Well, I don't know,
I'm
because
trying to wrap my
there's,
brain around
I
that.
think stories are such, is such good data, but there's like so much data in the world. And like, if you look at, right now I'm reading Empire of AI by
Oh,
Karen
yeah. I have
Yao.
that on my.
Have you
I
read
think I'm going to read it
that?
next.
It's quite depressing, but it's good.
Well, and Karen Howe meant like started writing it thinking she was going to be talking about like she started reporting on it thinking she's going to be talking about like kind of like heroes of technology. And she's just like, oh God.
But in it, she talks about like, because OpenAI starts by trying to ingest like good data, which is really stories and like the and long form text, which is actually kind of rare to find on the internet, which is why you get like all the fan fiction in there. But so I think stories are like really good data. And but then because OpenAI just needed so much data, they just took the whole internet really. And that's where things get rough and not so good. So
Do you know if it's read your book, ChatGPT?
I don't know. I haven't asked ChatGPT.
I didn't either. So I wrote a book that was in no way related to fiction, but like it was a just a book about like UX and
Oh,
writing,
cool.
being part of the design process. And like I remember when I discovered like I mean all of the LLMs had read that book. I'm just like, well,
Wow.
yeah, it's weird. Like I don't know what to think about
Yikes.
this. So. Like if I saw a human who's read a book and just sort of like operate in the world, I'd be like, oh, that's I'm honored. Thanks for reading it. And even if they got it from the library and didn't pay for it, it's fine. But like, you know,
But you know they bought it
commercialized,
because they were interested in you.
a commercialized robot read it. Like, So I'd love to get a little specific about some of the mechanics of the world you built, and maybe this is just my like growing up in the like Star Trek fandom. I was just
Oh,
like,
fun.
just people were just like. Just like, there's an inconsistency in episode 3, season 5, but like, there's one thing I was trying to figure out, like, you know, in the book, in kind of like pre-Cultural Revolution China, there's this pencil factory, and like everybody kind of works the front, and they have this like, you know, there's pencil cases, and then I love that you refer to like the cores of the pencil as the pencil hearts, and they seem separate. When I was reading it, I was like. just I feel like the pencil cores or something, you sort of like fit into the pencil instead of the pencil sort of being sandwiched around it. And I'm wondering in your head as you're writing this, like how, and I guess especially as like people are reforging the pencil, it's just the cores, right? It's not the wood that's going along with it. Or is it sort of the entire thing is just going in there?
No, just the cores.
Okay. So I'm just like thinking about like, is the pencil core and the wood just sort of like separate from each other? Can you pull out the core from the wood?
Oh, I see.
I haven't
And
thought that.
in my imagining of it, it's that they. Okay, well, okay. So this comes from one of the stories that my grandmother used to tell me, which I don't think is that common in. Well, you probably know more than I do about pencil manufacturing or current how they
I
are
mean,
currently
none of
manufactured.
my
But
family manufactured pencils, so you probably know more
well,
about
this
us.
is also a very blurry memory of when I was like in elementary school. But she, like, for some reason, this really stuck with me. Where like she told me about this process of you would take like the six pieces of wood and press them onto the core, and that's how the pencil would be finished, I guess. And in this case, I always imagined that they had the cores like on the walls, and those were kind of what's. I feel like this. There's there's something else that does this, but I can't remember what it is. Where you just like put it in a temporary holder, and that's when they try it out and sample it. Whereas the real pencils would be like all melted together, and that's just a way to try like the, I don't know, the how the graphite feels to you,
I
and
love that
then.
idea of like a tasting room. That's really cool.
Oh yeah, I would
Yeah. Well, that's definitely
definitely do
inspired by my time in stationery
that.
stores in Panama. And then yeah, the other part, I just imagine that like this family has some sort of ability where once the like graphite breaks into their skin, it just kind of like swoops it up.
I also just was fascinated by the idea that like just pencils made at that pencil company, at the Phoenix Pencil Company, are the ones who work best when they're kind of ingesting their own, and third-party pencils just kind of like make them sick while they're doing it. And that was really interesting to me, and it sort of like got me thinking about like, this focuses on just like one family and like one place, but like, so are there others out there who can do this, who like have close relationship with pencil companies, and if so, like do their own brands, like do they have the best
Oh, interesting.
kind of relationship with them? But I'm just thinking that there's like, Mr. Dixon Ticonderoga's out there somewhere, or
We'll have
like,
to talk to Mr. Hewlin.
or yeah, Johnny,
Hewlin
yeah,
Musgrave.
Johnny Hewlin's family, just like only Musgrave pencils are work with
He
them.
just seemed to like know something that other people don't know.
And maybe this is a good like, I'm not going to kind of give this away, the spoiler, but at one point they were trying to explore creating pencils that could not be reforged, could not be sort of ingested. And I don't think you mentioned like what they put in as an additive in that graphite, but I'm just like, what could it be? Is it like plastic? Is it like,
Kryptonite, of
just like I'm
course.
thinking it's like a Johnny, but oh crap, my brain is not working. The pencils, the German pencils you like that are made of
Oh,
plastic.
the
The Wopex, just like a Wopex
Wopex.
pencil is just going to insta. It's a pencil that's made instead of wood. It uses sort of like this, like almost sawdust plastic. Like it's a
Oh, okay. I've
reformulated
seen like
thing. And
those metal pencils. Have you seen those before? I didn't really enjoy using it, but so I don't have one.
yeah. In my head, a Wopex just instantly kills you when you just suck that into your wrist.
It touches your skin and it melts.
But yeah, no, I never imagined other families that could do it. I imagined that this family, I don't know how they figured out, maybe when they were a kid, they like stabbed themselves with a pencil and then they were like, whoa.
What was that?
yeah. But I imagined that they like fine-tuned it so that they could ingest it safely. And at the same time, it also happened to be the way that you can make a really good pencil. But yeah, I think I mostly wanted to be able to write about like somebody who took such care with her craft, and to be able to write about like crafting a pencil as an art as opposed to like this mass manufacturing process.
That.
And related, but probably not what I was thinking about at the time, but what you said kind of made me think of it, is like they can ingest their own pencils and it's good. They have more control of that. It doesn't hurt them. But then when they ingest the other pencils, it does hurt them. And that's kind of like the good data and the bad data of
I just
all the
In my
LMs
head, like
here.
some generations of pencil makers before, like have figured out how this works, and they're like, okay, we're gonna make like best formulation of graphite that's sort of the most comfortable to take in, right? Like...
Yeah, exactly.
And smoothness really matters.
Yeah.
So I really liked the magical realism in your book because, you know, everything was totally realistic except for reforging. So sometimes when I read pieces of magical realism, they'll start throwing stuff in like, oh yeah, the trees talk. That doesn't even work. Like, why would you do that much? So how did you not give into this to temptation, if there's a temptation, to put more magic into your story?
She's going to do the rest of that for the Phoenix Pencil Company too, like the second book in the trilogy.
Yeah, the Phoenix Pencil Factory.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a great question, because originally the book did have more magic than it does now, and a lot of it got cut even before I sent it out to agents or editors. But originally, and this does make it into the story in a different way, but originally they could kind of stab the pencil in themselves and then have like, and then the carbon would come back out and form like a super armor around their hands, which in the story it's still there in that the girls imagine they can do that in the stories that they make. But originally they could actually do that, and it was actually a much more like action-packed book.
Just a mecha Monica,
because I needed, yeah, like, and I was gonna, all right, this was never really a secret. I was like, oh, and then she can like play volleyball, it'll be really cool. But I never wrote
Yes.
that scene. And yeah, but no, more for the historical side, I thought they could, you know, have like a way to actually defend themselves. But then it got to, it wasn't like the right genre, really. Or one of my like writing group people told me that it felt too big magic, whereas the book was more like about small magic. And because the reforging was of the stories was still there, and that was like the actual important part. And yes, and then that got downgraded to just what people and what they imagine they can do.
It was
And
interesting because there was never, I mean, there were a few moments when somebody was like explaining how this works to someone where they're just like, oh, huh. Like nobody ever just seemed just like, this is incredible. This is crazy. Like, how is this working? And there's just like, oh, yeah, okay, I see it.
okay, I'm gonna go over here and talk to someone else.
Yeah, I think it helps that all the characters see the output at some point, and then they're like, whoa, how did that happen? And but yeah, so that was, yeah, so I think the small magic thing, and then also once I did start working with my editor, she, I think the magic used to be spelled out a bit more, and she suggested like hand waving a bit more of that to fit more with like, I don't know, the idea of like it's not really a story about the magic, it's or like how the mechanics work. And at the time I had also been hand waving some of the history, so she was like, stop hand waving the history and like hand wave the magic a
Also,
bit more.
the magic, I feel like another thing that I was expecting there to be more sort of like tension or friction with is so there's some romantic tension between Monica and Louise, and it's like, oh, like there's LGBT themes in here, and like, you know, this is her grandma's old school. Both of her grandparents are pretty old school, and they just sort of love her unconditionally. But is this going to be like a thing, right? Like, is this going to be like a sense of conflict? And there wasn't. And I think I appreciated that because this wasn't going to be a, you know, a story of like coming out to your grandparents, right? This was really, yeah. So that's something that I felt was kind of a similar, just like, it's almost like, yeah, some magical realism around sort of like expecting. Like the grandparents' old school expectations of like their granddaughter and like her sexuality.
Yeah, kind of the same thing of that's not really what the story was really about, and we had to move on to bigger themes.
But still, I appreciated it. So,
Thank you.
one of the big themes that we have talked about here before was just juxtaposing, you know, analog and digital, right? Like, I think that, you know, in these two time periods that's happening, often the characters are kind of like working in parallel, right? Like they're recording their own stories. There's themes of surveillance and data mining, which I think are kind of playing into the same thing. And as I mentioned earlier, just sort of like just setting fire to the establishment to just sort of reclaim their own narratives. So this is kind of maybe a big question, but how would you advise people in the world who kind of feel that dissonance between our digital selves and the selves that are in our bodies offline, right? Like, how do you, like, we have stories to tell. Maybe we don't quite know how to tell it or how best to express it. How did you do that for this book? And then also, like, how would you advise others to think about that?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a tough question, and I wouldn't say that I have it figured out either. But I do think journaling helps, and I think being able to tell your story in a way that feels true to you is something that helps you align yourself with, or just align all of yourselves really. And so I actually wasn't really keeping a journal until I started writing this book. And I was like, oh, that seems like it could be a good idea. So yeah, doing that. And yeah, I think as you mentioned earlier, like the book is all about stories and the stories we tell ourselves and the stories we tell of ourselves, which is also why the book is written in like an epistolary format where they are literally writing letters or journal entries and kind of forming the narrative of themselves as they're living. So I think that, and that's something that people can't really take away from you, or like comments on Instagram aren't gonna derail you too much from it, hopefully. Or so yeah, I don't know. That's how I'm thinking about it. But
That's
yeah,
cool.
it's not an easy thing.
I love just the mechanic is like there's quite literally stories inside of you, right? Like that you can either like hold in or spit back out, like kind of like resynthesize it. So yeah, sometimes I feel that way, just like, oh yeah, this is a thing that like I'm just gonna keep for myself, or this is something I'm sharing with everybody.
So we can't let you go without talking about some of your favorite pencils. But you
Oh,
also mentioned that you recently got into fountain pens. So can you talk about some that are your favorites or your go-tos, including pens and inks,
Oh,
or
yeah,
even
definitely.
notebooks if you want?
Oh, exciting. Okay. Well, let's see. I guess the pencil I have here is just like a
Got
Blackwing
a black wing.
682, and that's kind of the go-to maybe, but the go-to of all through college was the Kuratoga.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
Love a Curatoga.
because it rotates for you. It's an amazing innovation. I didn't know if it would work, but it really works. It got me through like all my problem sets. So.
See, I didn't come to a Curatoga until like not that long ago, like probably
Oh, really?
like 6 7 years ago, just because like they don't have those in Indiana, but I have a
Oh,
friend
I
who just frequently would go to Japan and just bring me back
Mm-hmm.
like weird little goodies, and definitely found
Oh,
that one.
nice.
Yeah, that's a good
Yeah.
one.
And they have a lot of like collaborations now. So if you're into any like cartoons or anime, they probably have a Kuratoga
I
of
think
that going.
they aren't they doing a because everybody's doing like Snoopy collabs right now. Like Blackwing
Yeah,
just released a
yeah.
Snoopy one, but I think
Yeah, I
Curatoga
bought it
has
for
like
my
a
mom.
yeah.
Yeah, and then as far as pens, I've been okay. So originally, it was this. I was like, since my middle school days of going to Taiwan, I had settled on like the Uniball Jetstream as my favorite. But they have this new one, the with the light touch ink that's like
Oh,
amazing,
cool.
and the actual inside can be used in the old Jetstreams as well. So
Oh, cool.
you can just buy the refills if you want.
What is the, I don't think I heard about the light touch ink. What is it? Just lays down without too much pressure. Is that it?
It's just super smooth. I think it came out last year, so it's still pretty new. But yeah, I've seen it in like very specialty shops in America. But yeah, definitely in Asia, they have them pretty prevalently.
2 years
And
ago, I went to
then,
the Itoya store in Tokyo.
oh
That's just like 8 floors and just
yeah, I was just there.
incredible. So fun.
Yeah. And then fountain pens. I'm going to expose myself because I don't actually know anything about my fountain pens, but they're actually all my partners, but I've been using them. So let's see, what is this? I think these are Sailor. And this one, oh, this one's kind of cool. So I don't actually know what it is, but I know it's Sailor, but I
Come on,
don't
Johnny.
know.
I have
Recognize
no
it.
idea.
But
I don't
the,
have a lot of
the
Japanese fountain pens.
oh, okay. The nib actually feels like a pencil. In that, like, it's kind of scratchy, which is kind of
Interesting.
cool. So that's kind of fun. And then the one I'm really into right now, which I actually don't have with me, is the Pilot Decimo, which is a click one. You click it, and then
Oh, yeah.
it writes.
I forgot to tell you, Johnny, as an aside, and then Allison too. I just got my hands. So I went to a couple weeks ago. I went to France, and I was like, they make Bic fountain pens, and I had no idea. And I was like, I really want a Bic fountain pen. I
Wow.
could not find any there, so I spent way too much money on eBay, and I got one of the
You got
Bic,
the metal one?
one of the Bic fountain. It's not metal.
Whoa,
It's
awesome.
just silver plastic, but it's
Looks
like,
cool though.
yeah, it looks like a Bic crystal, and
Does
like it
it do
has.
that like shotgun load?
No, not this one. Actually, well, I do also have. I've got this one too. This one
Yeah.
has like a, Yeah, you load the ink like this, and it's just
Whoa.
like,
That's the one I have.
lock and load. Yeah.
Wow. What are your favorites, Johnny?
Avenger Two
I
Riders,
really,
maybe?
yeah, I have like 100 or so of those. I really like Narwhal. I don't
Oh,
know if
Narwhal.
they're based in Taiwan or Japan or China, but yeah, they do a lot of like collaborations, and they did Pride pens for the last 3 years, including this year when it
Oh.
was kind of a little extra brave, and they did two, like one only they sold and one only the retailers could sell. So it was cool, but
Whoa.
they're
So
really
you have
nice.
both. Yes.
Yeah. And there's a collab they do with an artist who just goes by RTNIJP on Instagram, and hers are really pretty. I bought both of hers, or I was gifted both of hers. Frankie, buy me this. But yeah, they do a lot of really cool stuff and limited editions, and they've been doing cool stuff with titanium lately, which is really awesome.
Whoa.
That's really
Their
neat.
Pride pen was like anodized solid titanium, so it's like heavy rainbow. Yes.
Whoa. That's
Yeah,
awesome.
I don't know if they still listen to Bobsleigh, but Bobsleigh does some cool stuff. I didn't get
Oh,
to
okay.
visit
Yeah, check
there
it out.
last month.
Yeah, there's a store I've only just discovered, though. They've been around for a while in Newton called Paper Mouse, and that's where we've been going lately. It's very cute.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So, Allison, do you? So we have a little shared thing here with with notes that we were taking, questions to ask, and so Johnny put this in here, but I guess it's my turn to read a question. Do you have a phoenix tattoo?
I don't know. I am tattooless, but the I don't know if you received them, but the publisher had made some temporary tattoos.
Oh, I don't think I got
Cool.
those.
Oh,
I need
darn. Okay, we'll
to.
have to see if you can get
I
some. But yeah, I haven't put them on, but they look pretty cool.
will say, like, this is, first of all, this is a really good cover, but I will say that, like, almost always I feel like the UK covers are just better than like American covers on things, just
Oh.
universally. And the UK cover of this book is so good.
It is, yeah.
I love
They're I
that.
think I got very lucky. They're both very good and they're both very pencil-y. And
I
I
love
actually
the
thought
O's are pencil shaving rings.
the
So
flowers are really
yeah,
cool.
that was really fun.
Yeah, I think the
Yeah.
US one is much more subtle. The UK one is pretty
Yeah.
clearly like this is
It's
about
like
pencils.
pencils.
Yeah.
Tell me about, I just saw on Instagram, maybe over the weekend, there's a special edition of the book that's like, I feel like it has like gilded pages or,
Yeah, that's through Goldsboro, which is a bookstore in the UK. But yeah, they have 500 copies, I think. I don't quite remember, but yeah, so those are available for pre-order. I actually haven't seen one yet, but it looks cool from the image online. But yeah, it's got like the sprayed edges and it's shiny. Even the US hardcover, I actually don't have it with me, which is dumb, but
Johnny's
yeah.
like,
Yeah.
see if you can find one, Johnny.
Yes,
What?
they're not out until 31st.
I see. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, the
But
UK, it actually
whoa,
hasn't
I'm thinking
published in
about
the UK
those.
yet. And the US one, if you open the hardcover, which I really should have had it with me nearby, but if you open the hardcover, there's a little like shiny phoenix inside too.
That's cool.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Anything before we wrap it up, Allison? Is you okay, Johnny?
Yes,
I just heard a gasp.
I'd never taken the dust cover off before.
Okay. Oh, that's true. I got the advanced reader copy, so mine is just a mine is
Yeah,
a
so
yeah,
yours
this
doesn't have the
and
jacket, but the jacket's quite nice. And then
yeah.
under the jacket, you'll see it's black on the inside, and there's like the little gold phoenix that's just like, come
Oh
here.
man, I have to get a hold of this.
Come
I
here.
do like it's just in the very top corner that's hard, kind of hard to
Yeah,
see
that's the
if you're
phoenix,
all
yeah.
seeing, but yeah, I love that. I love that. And I don't know about you, Johnny. When I was reading this, I was like, man, I want some of these pencils.
I know, I do
like
too.
traveling with boxes of pencils. Like,
And
yeah,
I
I
wanted to meet
know.
some of the characters. Like, who do you know who goes, I like your drawings. What kind of pencils do you use? Marry me.
You guys did something where you sent out the press packets with some custom stamp pencils, and they look like
Yes.
baby Musgrave pencils. I don't know if you had any kind of like control over or thought about like where those pencils came from, but
No, I didn't, but
yeah.
I know who made them. They're on Instagram. Their handle is Longhand Pencils, and
Oh yeah, longhand pencils.
yeah, so I don't actually know the exact kind of pencil they use, but yeah, they look great.
Yeah, I like those a
Yeah, the
lot.
font was really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Allison, before we wrap up, is there anything else you'd like to mention or discuss or anything like that?
No, this was a lot of fun. Thanks so much for the
What's
thoughtful question.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I guess I should ask, people would ask me this question. I'm just like, shut up. But like, are you working on something else now?
Oh, yeah, I'm trying to. It's not under contract yet or anything, but I'm trying to work on it slowly, but I think it will be about
Oh,
semiconductors,
cool.
so kind of different, but
I
also
love
kind of
that.
similar. Yeah, and kind of probably still about mostly about the characters, but they'll be
Yeah.
hanging out with the
Yeah.
semiconductors.
That's so cool. I mean, you have to come out to San Francisco and do some field research down in Silicon Valley.
That's true. That's where it all started.
Cool. Well, Allison, thank you so much for joining us. This has been really fun. I was so excited. I was like, it's a book. It's not just, about like a pencil company, but like pencils play like a definite part, kind of like in the just the plot of this, and the characters are also good. So thanks for talking about it with us.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks
Yeah.
for
Where can people
the
find you on the internet?
My website is allisonjking.com, and I am on Instagram as Allison King Writes, and that's pretty much all I'm on.
And people can see pictures of your super, super cute cat.
Yeah, my
Oh,
cat and my dog are
you have a
hanging
dog.
out.
I didn't think I saw
I
that.
do. My dog's actually been sitting right here the whole time, but
Oh,
yeah,
yeah.
she's a sleepy
She's
girl.
sleeping. Oh, cool. Well, this has been the Erasable Podcast. You can find a recording of this episode and just show notes at erasable.us/228. If you are a Patreon member, you can find video of this. Like, if you subscribe at any level, go to patreon.com/erasable. And I forgot to bring over the Patreon names to read before this started, so I will insert those insert those after this, but before the end of the show. Hey, it's Andy from the future, about 9 hours in the future, with our Patreon members. So a big thank you to Chris Berry, John Schroeder, Ellen, Dana Morris, Liz Rotundo, Melissa Miller, Angie, Aaron Bollinger, Ida Umphers, David Johnson, Phil Munson, Valerie Drew, Tom Keekley, Andre Torres, Paul Moorhead, William Maudlin, John Capalute, Stephen Fansali, Aaron Willard, Millie Blackwell, Michael Dialosa, Tana Feliz, JAFX in the Midwest, Anne Sipe, Chris Metzkis, Mary Collis, Kathleen Rogers, Dr. Hans Nudelman, and John Wood. Thank you so much for your support. So, thank you all so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Turn it off.